You're listening to lgradio.online. I'm Leo Green and this is In Conversation. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Van Morrison. And in the last episode, Van was explaining to us the incredible schedule they all had to go through, all the bands in Germany, how they had to play pretty much all night, every night of the week. Van, that was an incredible schedule.
The whole thing was basically like a workshop. The motto is endurance, because when you get to past 12 o'clock at night, I mean, you go like, okay, we've got 3 more hours to go. I mean, you know, you get on the drums, I'll play the bass, you know. I mean, you know, you had to start, like, changing things around. Otherwise, you couldn't cope, you know. And then there were the guys from, well, they were the kind of British medics from, you know, they called them medics in the British Army. The British Army was there as well. And I had these guys, they call themselves medics. So about 1 in the morning, they go like, you know, have one of these little pills, you know. So I kept you awake for another 3 hours.
You can't imagine that happening now with all the health and safety. Were you the only horn player in the band?
No, it was 200 man Harry Mack. So it was six. No, at that point it was a 7-piece. So it was a 6-piece plus a singer. And I was playing tenor. He was playing, you know, mainly baritone, doubling on trumpet. So there's a lot of kind of that rock and roll sound, you know, that sound like Little Richard and like later Sounds Incorporated, you know, or Fats Domino, you know, that kind of saxophone sound. You know, I thought all this was normal. See, there was a ban on UK musicians going to America. That was during the ban, which was lifted, I guess, by the time of the Beatles, the ban was lifted. And then they started the exchange again, so that was a period where there was, you know, the UK wasn't really that, you know, but you couldn't, like, do that in the UK, so you had to go to Germany because, you know, if you wanted to play all the time, you know, then I guess that's what you had, that seemed what everybody was doing.
Sure. And by this point, had you actually started writing songs? I mean, when and how did all that begin?
When I was still in school, I was writing a bit of poetry, not songs. But at that point, I'd only written one song, but it was only because the trumpet player, you know, heard me. I was just in the afternoon, I was playing this song, and he said, "Man, we should do that." I said, "Well, it's nothing. It's just something I'm writing." He said, "No. You should do that. You should write. You know, you should write that song, finish it, and we should do it." So it was really him. If he hadn't suggested it, I wouldn't have bothered. No, because I didn't know, you know, if it was any good or not. That was the first song I remember writing.
Right. And so after those relentless days in Germany, endlessly playing rock and roll and soul covers, it must have been quite strange getting back to musical life in Belfast. What was that change of scene like for you? I mean, with regards, you know, what you wanted to be doing musically once back in Belfast?
It was just more intent on doing the blues. I really want to do this showman stuff. I don't want to do the top 10. I really want to do the blues because that's where I'm coming from and that's what I've always liked from the very beginning. So I was more intent on making that happen. So there was a kind of gig with a show band, another show band called the Manhattan Show Band, where I was trying to introduce more blues, but only a few songs. Then the same thing with Brian Rossi. Brian Rossi, I was introducing blues, but it wasn't that many because, again, see, Brian Rossi had to cover the whole spectrum from, like, you know, Frank Sinatra to Little Richard, you know? So it kind of came to a point where it was, okay, we'll have to just find a club and just do this because otherwise it's not going to happen. So when I was in London with the Manhattan Show Band and we're staying in Camden, we ended up down in Soho and we went to the 51 Club called the Kent Collier Club then, and there was this band on. And so they were doing all this stuff that I grew, you know, that I was listening to at home. When I was at home, it was like Bo Diddley, Muddy Waters, Jimmy Reed, all the stuff that I'd been listening to. And all of a sudden, these people, they're doing it. So I go like, go to my mate, why don't we just do this, because this is where it's at. So went back to Belfast and then got a premises, which was the Maritime Hotel. And my mate that was in the Manhattan Show Band, we tried to get other guy. I got a guy from the previous group that was in Germany on guitar, great guitar player. So there was like two guitars made, there was a drummer, bass player, and we started to rehearse. And then they all got cold feet. Don't know if blues is going to work. They all started to get like, you know, back out. And so anyway, they all started to back out. So I run into this guy in the street. We go back to Jim Tosh, is a guy that knew all the Hank Williams, Jimmy Rogers stuff. He was one of my mates, so we was running into him in the street. He said, "You look pretty depressed." I said, "I've got to go into this club, and I don't have a band. I've got to start in 2 weeks." Well, he said, "I got this band. I don't know if they're any good, but I don't like them because I'm not into Chuck Berry, and they don't want to do Hank Williams songs. So I'm gonna dump them." So I said, "Chuck Berry? Yeah, well," I said, "but that might be close." And so, basically, that was, I didn't have a choice. So I got these guys, they knew some Chuck Berry numbers, got them some recordings of Slim Harpo, Bo Diddley, Muddy Waters, Jimmy Reed stuff, and, you know, cobbled together enough stuff for an R&B set, which included quite a bit of Chuck Berry, because that's all they knew. So then that was the band that went in the club. But it wasn't the band that was meant to go in the club. The band that was meant to go in the club was my band.
Right. And just before we hear about the club scene, Van, can you just explain to us now how big a part of life the show band scene was in Belfast in the 60s? It was massive, wasn't it?
Well, in Belfast alone, there were probably 20 ballrooms going.
And presumably, you know, because it was a show band, Van, you couldn't just stand there and play. You really had to sell it, right, and perform.
Of course, you had to move. That's what I mean. Most of this early stuff, I was like moving all the time then. You know, I stopped doing that because everybody else at that point was doing it. I mean, when I started, I was like, wild. It was completely wild. And then, you know, after a while, you know, everybody was doing that. So I said, I'm just going to like stand still now because, you know, everybody's doing that now.
Yeah. And what about the blues scene in Belfast at that time? I mean, what was going on? Did you get to see much live blues? What exposure did the public and musicians like you have for live blues? I mean, was anybody putting on any blues shows?
Dougie Knight was one of the first guys. He brought blues singers to Belfast. He was the first guy to promote blues, actual real blues singers. But he brought Jesse Fuller, Brother Montgomery, Memphis Slim, Juke Boy Bunner, to name a few. More than that, but he actually was promoting blues, and he was one of the first people to actually bring these people to Belfast. But he had a shop too. That's where I brought the John Lee Hooker Baby Please off him, you know, and that was kind of the version I went with was based on that record I bought in his shop. Yeah.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans because I love you.
And apart from the John Lee Hooker stuff, who else's records would you have been buying at that time?
It was Armstrong. I mean, my favorites were like Armstrong, Hot 7, Hot 5, especially the track. I like the tracks with Lonnie Johnson on there when it was like the Hot 7. And the vocals, of course, tracks where he sings. And then I like Woody Herman, blues stuff that Woody Herman was putting out. Hank Williams, there was an interesting guy called Tex Morton. From Australia, actually. He was an Australian, but everybody thought he was from Texas. He was actually from Australia. He had some great stuff.
I'll tell you a story, won't take me long.
So you're really getting access to some great stuff, Van. Can we just go back there? You were just telling us Okay, you'd gone into the Maritime Hotel in Belfast. You're building up a following and a reputation there with all the regular gigs. And before not too long, word gets out and Decca Records sends someone over to check you out and presumably try and bring you to England. Can you just take us through what, you know, what happened there?
Well, this guy came over from Decca and he saw like all these girls fainting and all that. There's something going on here. He came like there was hysteria. You know, them mania, or whatever you call it. But I said, oh, this is what we want. We want this. They wanted to see, they didn't have a blues band from there. You know, they had a few in London. They had several in London. They had like one in Newcastle, which was the Animals, which was actually called the Alan Price Combo, I think, actually, before they were called the Animals. Because we had actually played the Cafe Gogo in Newcastle with the Monarchs. That was the time we were in Scotland. And then we swung down and played the Cafe Gogo in Newcastle. And at that point, the guy was saying, yeah, the band in here is called Alan Price Combo. I remember that. Then they showed up later as the Animals. Like I said, so that they had, like, you know, Newcastle had an R&B band. There was few in Liverpool. But they didn't have anything from Ireland, you know, especially Belfast. You know, and I was it. There was nothing except me. So that's what the guy showed up there to hear a blues singer, and he heard one. And he saw like a performance that was wild. Gone, gone, gone. In those days. So
Presumably they try and get you guys to what? Come over to London? And how does that play out?
Weirdly enough, we got over here, it was all kind of trying to like tame the lion after that. It was the end of Tin Pan Alley sort of thing. It was the tail end of Tin Pan Alley. So Phil Solomon had Tommy Scott, Phil Coulter, and Bill Martin. And they were Tin Pan Alley guys. So they kept pushing their songs, which were like more poppy kind of songs. So the kind of wildness that we had was kind of, watered down and gradually, you know, kind of siphoned, you know, trying to make us, you know, kind of fit in. So that was like the beginning of the end, basically. Because it was all kind of, you know, who's manipulating who and what for? Who's pushing whose songs on whom? You know, so I was trying to get my songs on there, and then Phil Coulter was trying to get his, and Tommy Scott was trying to get his, and, you know, they were even threatening me that, you know, they were threatening me and all kinds of stuff, you know. I want you to do this song, and, you know, like, throwing a chair around and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, man, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that went on. You know, it's not what the rock magazines say. The rock people, they're all conformists. You know, they're not rebels. I mean, they all had this kind of PR that they were rebels and all that, but if you look at it, they're really conformists, and they're like just into the money, not rebels at all. So anyway, it all became very difficult. It all became very difficult. And then people were jumping ship, you know. I mean, so I'd arrive at the office sometimes because the thing was to check in the office on a Monday morning to get your wages, which wasn't very much. And you got your wages, and then, you know, they would tell you where to go next. And so sometimes I'd go in the office and I go, oh, where's Billy? Billy? Oh, he's not Billy. Billy's not here. I said, well, where is he? Oh, he got a job in the post office. Things like this. So I mean, people were just jumping ship because there was no money, and so it was like, you know, so they were jumping ship and leaving me. So, you know, Phil took me in the office, Phil and Dorothy. They were a team, Phil and Dorothy Solomon. And so, you know, Dorothy was also a good cop as well. She took me in her one in her office to say, like, I think it must be because you play ball, you know. We just wanted to play ball, and, you know, I can do this song with Tommy Scott, do Tommy Scott's song, and, you know, and everything will be fine, and, you know, have a drink. And she, like, poured me a drink and all this. And then I said, well, I mean, I want out of this, Dorothy. So she said, well, okay, we're going to see Phil, but I think you should just, you know, just play along, you know. So I went to see Phil next door, and then Phil would say, like, I said, look, I don't give a fuck if you have a chimpanzee backing you up. As far as I'm concerned, I've got a contract with you, and I don't care about any other guys. So I'm going to hold you to the contract, and we can have anybody backing you up. I said, well, then that's not a group, then, is it? You know, that's me and any four guys. said, yeah. So then we said, well, why don't you just give me my own contract? Because that's a lie then. I mean, if I'm going out under the name Them, which is a group, and it's not a group because everybody's jumped ship, you know, then you just, you want to hold media contract, then why don't you just give me my own contract and just call it Van Morrison? So he's just ranting and raving. He threw me out of the office and all this kind of shit. So anyway, so then Dorothy says, oh, why don't you go and talk to Tommy? So anyway, in the interim, they wanted me to go to America, right? Somebody was playing a record on the West Coast, or one of the records, Gloria, which had already been out in the UK and came and gone. But then, you know, in America it was different, so somebody was playing it and a few other tracks. And so it was like, we want to go to America for 3 months. I go, are you kidding me? I don't, you know, there's no, they don't have a band. And at that point, the bass player was still around. Bass player was from the original band, was still sticking around. I said, well, yeah, Tommy said, well, I'll tell you what, if you and the bass player get together and get some other guys and do this American tour, then, you know, I promise you, you will have your own solo recordings out when you come back, right? He said, I promise you, have your own. So when are we going to do this? He said, I'm, you know, you want me to go and then you tell me we're going to have this one. He said, well, why don't we just do it now? You know, why don't we do it now? Why don't I just record, you know, some of my own stuff now? So, yeah, okay, well, I'll book a studio, get some session musicians, and we'll get this going now before you go, right? So I went in. With session musicians, I recorded, at that time I was recording three tracks. So two of those were supposed to be a single. I was signed to Scott Solomon's Productions, which was Phil Solomon, Mervyn Solomon, Dorothy Solomon, and Tommy Scott. So Tommy Scott says, okay, we'll go in, and we did, sure enough, we went in. Kristen Schachter said, okay, well, we've got these now, so they'll be coming out under your name. So I said, when you come back, you know. So anyway, I get over there, get the LA. In L.A. for about 2 weeks. Tommy Scott flies over to L.A. And he says, I brought a copy of the new album with him. Right? So Them Again. It's called Them Again. So look at the cover I got. Well, there's my tracks that I recorded as a solo artist. And they're on this album, you know? And then he started to backtrack. No, but it's okay. Be okay when you get back. I said, no, Tommy, it won't. It won't be okay because... this is not okay. That was the end for me. Finished the obligation there, ended up with no money. I came back via London. I remember the only money, I had like 69 pound from all that. That was it. Got a flight to Belfast from here. I was sweating.
It's like you've had a whole career by this point when you're just 20.
This was a whole lifetime even before any of this other stuff happened. Yeah. So, yeah, that takes us up to there.
Never grumbles or fusses, always treats me right. Never on the streets, leaving me alone. She knows a woman's place, right back by in her home. Got a woman way across town. She alright, she alright. I got a woman way across town.
Concludes this episode of In Conversation here on LGRadio.online with my very special guest, Van Morrison. More from Van as we continue our In Conversation series with him. Please just check the website out, lgradio.online, to find out when the next episode with Van is on. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.